a Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, gol!
Bang on the money.
All the water.
That's the funniest fucking meme I've ever seen.
I cried at that. That was unreal.
How long have you been recording for it?
About, I don't know.
It's fine. Let's just carry on.
Yeah, just start.
Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
Yep, the resident Dogecoin expert. We got Maddie with us as well.
Yeah, Oliver, are you locked in a basement? It looks like you're in a dark dungeon. Are you okay? Do you need help?
Two floors up. It does look sinister, doesn't it? But we had a complaint, basically, that my face wasn't lit correctly because the light is in the middle of my room behind me. So the light's in front of me this time. And I look like I'm going to drop some voodoo wisdom.
Some donkey magic.
A little bit more like a ghost. But Gian, welcome again.
It's winter.
I love.
Right.
The beard's on this side, the clean face is on that side.
For me, it's up top.
Never mind.
Yeah, same.
Right, I suppose we should actually talk about Milan. Did we review the Bologna game?
It was on a Saturday.
Wow.
Okay, yeah, yes. We did. We've already sorted that. No problem. So we can just talk about today's game then. I'm sorry, I'm way out of sync since we did the two episodes in a week thing. So we can just talk about today's game. That's great. So, Jan, you predicted that... Actually, I think it was more than just Jan. Someone else said it.
Me and AJ.
Yeah, said we were due to give a team an absolute drubbing. And it finally came today. You know, we've been threatening to sort of... Particularly early in the season when we had this run of games, we were sort of threatening to beat a team 4-5-0 and it never really came. We had to make do with 2-0s. And then there's been a few games recently where perhaps, you know, the Sassuolo away game, Sampdoria away game, where we've been 2-0 up and we've conceded late on to make it more interesting. It should have been. This time we managed to just blow past the team. Now, I know Crotone are unceremoniously on their way back to Serie B. They're not a great side. Like, first half, they held their own a bit, you know. They play a 3-5-2, which naturally we struggle to play against sometimes, but their actual build-up play wasn't that bad. But what they've been terrible at this season is defending when they've needed to defend. And, you know, they sat back, they tried to make it difficult, but then we unlocked them with that goal around about the half-hour mark, and that just seemed to really calm us down then. And I suppose in the end it could have been 5 or 6, but 4-0, biggest win of the season. Pretty good job.
At the beginning I was a little nervous because we weren't, you know, putting any shots in and they were getting a little close, and I was like, if we lose to a team that we shouldn't lose to, it's gonna be the last place team. And then we just turned it on and they didn't even have a chance.
This is my turn.
Yeah, sure.
I was like, you know, I'm gonna not interrupt anyone if someone starts talking right away this time, and then of course no one did. But yeah, it's basically exactly what Maddie said. You know, we started off, we looked strong actually the whole game. We just weren't scoring in the beginning. But once Adam Oannes, I forget his name.
Yeah.
Once he came off and Castillejo came on, surprisingly, like we looked a lot better, and then Hakan came on, and that was like the end of it. I mean, that was two goals in 70 seconds and three goals in like 4 minutes or something like that. So yeah, it was nice. Two braces. I really thought we were going to get that hat trick. Zlatan almost had it. He had that one header. It was good stuff. Happy morning.
It was nice for us to get just a comfortable win, but again, we didn't really get out of first gear, I didn't think. So it was nice to get the win. Crotone, I didn't think, first half, I didn't think they were overly bad, and they reminded me of the way that they played against Inter at the start of the calendar year, where they lost 6-2. They were actually like, they had more possession than them, they had quite a few shots and stuff, and they were doing that to us in the first half, but then I suppose we turned it on a little bit, but everyone was just good for us this game, so it's hard to like even bring up a discussion about did anyone step out of line or anything, because everyone was pretty much on point. For the first time this season, we seem to, the whole side just seems to have been in sync.
The one, anyone who dropped below a 6 out of 10 for me. I mean, Mete, for example, has drawn a lot of criticism for the way that he started. But then you've got to remember he was played out of position in obviously the Atalanta game. Was good in the debut, but that was like a 20-minute burst. And then, yeah, in the Inter-Coppa game, again, he drew a lot of criticism. But today, I thought he was pretty good. I thought he was pretty solid. I was worried because the idea of signing him was for him to be the alternative to Kessié and not partnered with. So I thought that our creativity might be a little bit stretched by that as a result. But I actually thought Mete did a good job. He was the one who was pushing forward more, and he kept putting himself in difficult places for Crotone to handle. And I don't think he was ever going to go from like a 4 out of 10 performance to a 9 out of 10 performance. But if he just keeps giving us 6 out of 10s, then that's fine. You know, as long as we've got someone that we consider to be a dependable alternative, then that's great.
Well, and remember, he's brand new to the squad. You know, like, yeah, exactly. He's played a good chunk of games since arriving, but he's still, he doesn't know exactly how we move. And the fact that we're getting starters back every couple days, every week, he's got to reacclimate to how we play just about every single week for the next couple months. So it's going to take him a while to get to what his full potential is on this team. And like you said, he's probably never going to be that 9 out of 10 player. But he can be a 6 out of 10, a 7 out of 10, you know, and he might have a couple great games in him as well. So, yeah, I was happy with his performance.
Yeah, he's an upgrade on Krunic at the end of the day. That's what we all wanted because we were 16, Krunic playing CDM. Before today, he played 153 minutes for us, which is less than 2 games. Like you said, 45 minutes against Atalanta out of position against one of the best teams in the league. Then in a Coppa Italia match against another one of the best teams in the league, which we're Inter. And we were down to 10 men for the second half. And then he played 20 minutes against Torino in the Cup. So we haven't actually really seen him. So all the criticism's been, I'd say, a tad bit harsh for someone that hasn't even played 2 games yet. So today it was nice to see like actually what he can bring. And if he does just bring 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10, then he's doing what he was brought in to do. He's not going to be Hakan. He's not going to be Kessié Benintendi. He's just going to be someone that will be a gap filler for the squad.
Yeah, and you've got to remember that, you know, that's probably what you get nowadays out of a 10 million euro midfielder. You're not going to get a match winner, a game changer. 10 million euros, it probably gets you that kind of player. It probably gets you an inconsistent one too. But if we can start to see a good run of games from him, then I think the fans will quickly be saying that we should buy him out. Speaking of someone to buy out, I was very impressed with Fikayo Tomori again. I understand people who were saying that they're a bit undecided on him just yet because we aren't used to seeing that kind of a defender in our team because we've been so used to under different coaches playing a deeper defensive line. And then we've been used to under Pioli having a higher defensive line, but a firm one still, like a flat back four when we're not in possession, which is very much needed if you're playing that high up so we don't get caught offside trap. But Tomori is something different to what we have. Kalulu was kind of like it, but he's not as physical, so it doesn't work as well. But he breaks that line and he bursts forward and he makes sure that if the centre-forward has dropped deep to get the ball, we saw it with Lukaku, we saw it with Alexis Sanchez in that cup game, he doesn't mind going with them and making sure that they don't have an easy turn and then, you know, they're bearing down on our goal. I think he complements Romagnoli well, who neither of them were put under too much danger today, but the bits that they did have to do, they did very, very well. Another thing that people have said is that aerially, in terms of aerial duels, Tomori might leave a little bit to be desired. But again, I've seen nothing to really suggest that that's the case. Everything that came over from either wing back was pretty routinely dealt with. So I would say that for his first home league start, it was a solid sort of 8 out of 10 performance from him, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect assessment of his game, honestly. I mean, that was the player that we all kind of wanted to redeem even before he arrived, and he's just kind of proven why we should. You know, great value for the money. Obviously, 30 million is a lot, but that's what you're going to get in today's market for a worthwhile defender.
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy how he's come into the league, a league that he's never played in, is just fit in perfectly. Like, you don't
and,
see
and in big games,
often.
Too. Like, yeah, it's rare.
Today's game wasn't that big, but you know,
right, but I mean, against still, like Inter and whatnot, that was, yeah. I'm happy.
I think 28 million will turn out to be a steal for the reason why I said a couple of weeks ago, in fact, that we'd probably be able to sell him on for double, if not triple, to a Premier League club because they love to have a player and they need the English defenders. But also, when you look at what we bought Romagnoli for a couple of years ago, 25 million euros, in today's market, with the way inflation's gone, and to have what, if we're being fair, in 3 or 4 years, Tomori will probably be a better player than Romagnoli. So to get someone like that for 3 million more, I'd say is a steal. And it just, if I was Maldini, I'd already be ringing Chelsea up and saying, I'm activating the clause.
Yeah, I have some really good friends that are Chelsea supporters, and I was with them last night. And we were just, you know, talking football, and Tomori got brought up, and the mood changed. They were not happy. They thought they got robbed. And
a lot of my friends who are Chelsea supporters feel the same way. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, you can see it. You can. Social media Twitter is not exactly known for nuance, but at the same time, you can gauge pretty well as a result of it what a fan base is thinking based on the replies to our tweets about Tomori, the replies to other tweets, and I'd say 90% are pretty gutted to have seen him leave. There's the emotional attachment aspect of it, like if, let's say, Gabir in 2 or 3 years had played Champions League football for us and still looked like a bright emerging defender, would we be upset to see him leave to another club on loan with an option? Probably, you know, we would, because there's the sentimentality of it. He came through the Cobham Academy at Chelsea, and I think that they feel like Lampard, who was out of favour with most of the supporters, that Lampard gave him bad treatment, basically, and it was the wrong circumstances for such a talented player to leave. But we've welcomed him with open arms. Based on the interview he gave before the game, it sounds like he's thrown himself into the experience. He's learning Italian. He says he's here to make a mark. You know, these are all very, very positive things to hear from a player. And it's nice to have that option to buy, because it is almost like I don't want to talk about a player as if they're a product, but it's like a try before you buy type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if it comes down to it, in 4 months down the line, we've seen enough from him to suggest that he's a defender worth 20 mil plus, then you absolutely activate it. And as I've said in previous episodes, we were willing to spend 18 million euros on Simakan, on Loic Badé, on arguably more unproven defenders in the January window. When the summer window comes around, we've got that 18 million plus a bit more, because we'll hopefully be in the top four in the Champions League. So it doesn't become as ridiculous an investment as people are making out. And I think we'll be able to pick and choose. You know, if we have to get Tomori in, but it means we don't overpay for Dalot, then so be it. You know, you leave that up to the management, because they're more qualified to make the decisions. But I really like what I've seen so far. And who knows, might even negotiate something a little bit lower. But it sounds like Tuchel fancies a look at him
we're not getting something lower. There's no chance.
I think with Tomori, I know it sounds a bit daft, but the fact that he's learning Italian kind of suggests that he's looking to stay longer. I mean, if you're coming on a 6 month loan, you're not gonna be throwing yourself into learning it, trying to learn a whole new language for 6 months if you know you're going back to England and probably gonna play in England for the rest of your life. So I think he's got the intention, and Milan have got the intention of keeping here for at least 2 or 3 years and then reassessing then.
I think you're right as well, what you say about the potential for resale. It's just an obvious fact from now on that English clubs are going to be after English players, especially those ones that seem to go abroad and do well. There seems to be a certain aura surrounding those kind of players, like Jadon Sancho obviously being the best example at the moment, but there's others too who've gone abroad and sort of their stock has risen, and then they've gone back for a much bigger fee. If that happens, then it's smart business from us, to be honest. But who knows that he actually says, no, I don't want to go back. I'm really enjoying it here. Who knows where we might be as a club in 2 or 3 years, and where Chelsea might be, or where, you know, whoever might be. So, yeah, it's just nice to have him for now, and I'm enjoying it. Calabria won us some money with his booking. That was great.
Just you.
It was a wise bet, that, I suppose. So for the context on that, he was one booking away from reaching the threshold of 5 yellow cards for the season. And it means that by getting one, he serves his suspension next week away at Spezia, and he's back for the derby. He'd actually joked in Twitch stream about getting a yellow card for the game. So, I mean, it was a foul. It's not like there was any match fixing or anything going on in it. But yeah, that means that he'll hopefully be back for the derby. The two other selection problems that we had, we saw Hakan come off the bench and absolutely, I won't say changed the game because we were in control, but he came off the bench and showed exactly what we've been missing, really. you know, someone so confident on the ball and can just turn a chance out of nowhere. I saw someone say he had 3 key passes in his opening 3 minutes.
I believe it. Well, he had 2 assists in his opening 3 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say, because we scored 2 goals.
Yeah.
So that was fantastic to see. Obviously, he's a bit ropey still after COVID. He was one who suffered with the symptoms earlier on by the sounds of it. So I think it was the right thing to do not to start him and make him play 70 minutes. If he'd have done any more damage, then we might have missed him for the derby, which is obviously a massive game. And then we've got Roma after that. And then Benacer will hopefully be back for the next game, but he's got some kind of fever/bronchitis, which means that he wasn't risked either. But yeah, the bottom line of all that is the signs are really good. We're winning at ease without having, you know, 4 or 5 key players every single week. Trying to think of anybody else who deserves a mention. Rebic,
did
probably.
Benacer have COVID?
No, he has bronchitis.
Right, but I'm wondering if this is like an effect from having it.
I don't know.
Not to my knowledge. I don't think he's had it. No. There was some question marks about the fact that Benacer and Tonali were both confirmed out of the squad at the same time, that there was going to be an announcement that they've both got COVID. But obviously Tonali has already had it, but he had it months ago with the Italy under-21 squad when their game in Iceland got cancelled. And Gabia got flown home on a different plane to Tonali because he had it. So don't know about the chances of him getting it again. But yeah, they'll both be back for the Spezia game, which would be a good warm-up test, really, for the derby. And Tonali in particular, you think, for that Red Star game as well, where in that first leg away from home, we might potentially rotate a little bit. So, yeah, all positive on the injury front. Rebic scored 2 goals in 69 seconds as well. Nice. That deserves a mention.
It does. So does Teo. I mean, he did nothing different than he normally does, but he's just always fantastic. And, you know, the fact that he could run 9/10 of the pitch in a couple seconds and put us into an attacking spot, like, it's the best. I love it. He was beating everyone.
If I was an opposition manager, I'd be saying, so Milan have this guy, this left back, who is one of the quickest players in their team. And what he does is he gets the ball at left back and he will run for the penalty spot. He just makes that diagonal run inside every single time without fail. And nobody seems to be able to stop it. Now, whether it's because he susses it out and he sees where the gaps are going to be to run through, that's really intelligent play. But to me, it seems like he does the most damage when he almost runs for the penalty spot.
Yeah.
Whatever way to get there, he just barrels through. And it was a really heroic block at the end of that run as well, because if Liao would have somehow got that passed, it would have been such a good goal.
Yeah, definitely. But that's a play that we work, you know, Gigio handing the ball straight to Teo from a opposition attack, and then he runs it. Like you said, he can see where the hole is going to be, and the fact that he's probably the fastest person on earth, you know, like, he could get there pretty quickly. So, that's all.
Cracking.
It's hard to see that both fullbacks are just so good at attacking. Like, Calabria had that goal disallowed early on, which were a nice bit of play from the whole team, really. But Salamaker, he had, I'd say, a fairly poor game, but then when he's on the pitch, we're a bit more dangerous because we allow Calabria to run forward, and then we've got 2 attacking fullbacks joining the game. Calabria seems to play better with Salamaker, seems to play better with him, because he then turns into more like an inverted winger instead of going on the overlap, because when Calabria does the overlap with, say, Castillo, is less effective. So as much as Salamaker seems like having a bad game, we do look a bit more attacking, better with him on down the right hand side.
Yeah, we do. Thing is, I thought he had a poor game as well, to be honest, Salamaker's, but that's because we know that he's a limited player technically. So when we're probing for so long to find that goal, everything feels less forgiving. You know, we struggled a bit in that first 30 minutes. They had quite a lot of the ball. We were struggling to create clear-cut chances. And it's in those moments where you really notice more than any other time that Salamaker's is so limited. He isn't going to be the guy who, like a Suso might have done, and please, this is not a comparison, but like a Suso might have done on the right wing, just out of nowhere, he's going to score a goal. That isn't him. he contributes a lot to the team, as we've talked about so many times, in terms of balance, in terms of his work rates, the areas of the pitch that he covers. But he ain't going to be that guy to break down a low block, unfortunately. That's where someone else might come. I thought we looked better with Castillejo on the pitch. I can't really put my finger on why that is, to be honest. Perhaps it was just the extra pace. Perhaps it was just the fact he's a bit more direct. It could well be that it's also because he played a lot of the game with it already in the bag. So looked more dangerous because we were countering more. But I think the bottom line is that something's needed on that right wing come the summer. And I think the management will see that as well, probably. Yeah. That's it. Any more performances to mention? Kind of thing. Oh, one thing I will say is, was that not the game to perhaps, with it kind of wrapped up at a fairly early advanced stage, is that not the ideal game to throw on a couple of the youngsters?
Yeah, I would hope to see them. I was hoping to see Maldini come on. I think we had it wrapped up by 70 minutes. It was 4-0, wasn't it? So I'd like to see Maldini. I mean, Howe did get his chance. I'd like to see Kalulu come on, but obviously they wanted to get Calabria's tactical yellow card in. But I am a bit disappointed that we didn't see Maldini.
Yeah, but also we had some players coming back from not playing for a while. And with the Inter game in 2 weeks, it's important for them to get in game time as well. So.
Yeah, I didn't think it. I mean, I understand the want for the youth players, but at the same time, like Mandzukic has got to get game time. That's a good time to give him some fitness there, some match experience, let him get in. Hauge did get in there. So Samu came on at halftime because the game was still needing to be played and Salamakers wasn't doing too hot. After that, I mean, I guess who else came on? Krunic came on. That was the last substitution, I think, and that one I'm always against, so I guess there you could see Maldini coming in, but for the most part I think he did get the subs right.
Yeah, that was a good point as well about some of the players needing some minutes in their legs. And one thing I will say as well is that putting Mandzukic on, I wouldn't argue with that either, because you needed to give Ibra the rest. There's no point making him play 90 minutes in that situation unless he was demanding to get a hat-trick, I don't know, but also it would have been nice to get Mandzukic his first goal.
And he almost had it.
And it was the right sort of circumstances for him to do that, but it wasn't to be. Yeah, I think overall that it isn't our best performance of the season, in my opinion, even though it's the biggest win. I think we had a really good spell in the game and that's what completely busted it open. But I think we've had better performances over 90 minutes. The hope now is that winning a game in such an emphatic fashion carries on and it gives the players so much confidence, especially after the back-to-back defeats.
I think it's a testament to the team though, isn't it? If you're winning a game 4-0, it's not even your best performance of the season, then that does show how good this team is and how serious we are. And 21 straight rounds of being top of the league, it's not by luck anymore. It is, which we've got to start admitting that we are a good team and we should be fighting for the Scudetto, not top four.
Yeah, this is also the first time that we've actually just like laid it on, because normally after the 2-0 lead, we just kind of take this foot off the gas, but you could tell that they just kept on pressing it down. So
I think
we've been waiting for it all season.
Yeah,
it was targeted bursts of energy as well, wasn't it? Like when we went 2-0 up, for us to then deploy an even more aggressive press, and that's where the fourth goal came from, for example, was winning the ball high up the pitch, and we should have had another like that as well. That says it all to me. The players are going to work for 90 minutes, and you're right, we've sat back before, but I think we sensed an opportunity today to really give a team a hiding and a statement win as well. Like, don't underestimate this idea of Inter having won at Fiorentina on Friday night. Not as difficult a game, a trip as it might have been in recent years, but Juve beating Roma last night and them both sat there rubbing their hands thinking, over to you now, and us just responding with a 4-0 win. That's
and not breaking a sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
That was pretty big. So that was all good. Yeah, can't think of anything else really to mention from that game, but excellent stuff.
I just said that Leao in... showing that it can play anywhere across the attack now, like up front, left wing, centre attacking. Although it's not as effective in the centre attack and mid role, he's still playing well, and it's just brilliant to have that versatility across the front three, four, if you like, that he can just play anywhere. And I think we've got a real gem on our hands with him.
I'll throw it out there now, just so we don't end up not asking it. But Matt Robson asks, are you surprised by Leal's good performances at CAM? He's a player who's got a good shot on him, really good at dribbling, he's quick, but the technical ability he's displayed in that number 10 role was something I didn't think he had in his locker. I think on paper, he's got everything it would take to be a good creative number 10. My worry about him would have always been, and this isn't a lazy criticism, if you watch what Hakan does, you know, the way that he almost drops into midfield three and then he can become like a second striker. I didn't think Leal would do that. I didn't think he'd work that vertical channel so much. I thought he might end up playing quite close to Zlatan. But I have been impressed seeing him there. I really have. I thought it was an experiment that might fail. But
I'm not surprised, though, because he just loves to play, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel like a player who's like, I mean, all players love to play, but that kid always has a smile
on
his face.
Yeah, he has, like, when he takes someone on, whenever he's running, he's just running with a smile on his face. The position I'd like to see him in, I'd like to see him more on the right wing, because obviously that's where we need a bit more creativity. And to, we can't, it's hard to drop Rebic when he's getting the goals and the assists like he is, and it's hard to drop Leao when he's doing the same. So maybe when everyone's fit, having Leao on the right, Rebic left, Hakan behind Ibra, that might be a thing. It'd be nice to see him there too. But it's just the fact that he won't be able to cut in because he's right footed and not left. So that could be the only issue with it.
Yeah, I'd like to see that as well. And it's one of those things where, like, Leao was okay to be on the bench as Zlatan's backup. But now that Mandzukic is there, we know he's no longer the backup striker. And with Rebic basically being that starting left wing now, and then we have Hauge, we have Hakan who could play there, and Leao, that the backup left wing spot is a lot shadier as well. So he's got to find that spot that he could fit in perfectly. And I think he's the right kind of guy to experiment with, because he's willing to try and give his best and just earn that spot anywhere. I mean, I bet he'd play center back if we needed him to. So
yeah, it's hard to drop him, isn't it? Like, when he's putting in the performance that he's putting in, whenever you play him and he's coming in with a goal or an assist, how do you drop someone that's doing that?
Right.
Even though the whole team do it, you can't justify dropping him.
There's an argument that Leao could be one of the best impact subs in the league, but I know that people don't like the idea of admitting that someone could be a really good sub, because it kind of limits the potential of someone so young. But I just think of a game like today, for example. Let's say if we had Hakan playing as the attacking midfielder, and at 2-0, for example, we were able to bring Leao off the bench to absolutely wreak havoc down that left side. It's just a fantastic, it would really show our squad depth. But I also understand the calls for him to be somehow, I won't say crowbarred, but for him to be tried on the right, because he has done it on a couple of occasions in game and it didn't look terrible. But
that's where he got his assist from.
Pioli said after the game, he got asked about it actually, and Pioli said basically no. Rebic and Leao are two natural left wingers, and that's where he intends to keep them. Could be a flat denial as a smokescreen for something he's working on, but I actually don't think he is. I think you've got to consider the dynamic of that right wing. It needs a really, really hard working, backtracking right winger. I'm not saying Leao can't do that, but we've seen things that suggest that he wouldn't quite occupy the same spaces as Salamakers or even Castillejo. I think Hauge has potential to be a right winger, but not start experiment. So we've got one game to preview before we record next. We all seem to have discovered at the same time that we play Saturday night and not Sunday night. So we've got Spezia away on Saturday night. This is the point where I have to look where they are in the table. But the last that I remember is that Spezia are actually doing okay, considering a lot of people tip them to go straight back down in their first Serie A season. I've seen Vincenzo Italiano, Vincent Italian, their head coach, getting a lot of plaudits. Just looking now, they've won three out of their last six games, which for a team looking to avoid relegation isn't too bad at all. Of course, they had that game against Roma recently where they got it to 3-3 really late on, and then Roma somehow scored a winner to make it 4-3. But they don't seem to be a bad team. Entertaining, at least. They're hovering just above the drop zone. In terms of goal scorers, they've top scorer is Mbala, and Zolo, I remember us being linked with him as a potential deputy to Ibra during the January window. He's got 9 in the league. Apart from that, it's pretty spread out. Players that you might recognise. We're scraping the barrel here. Obviously, the main one is Tommaso Pobega, who's on loan from us. He can play.
Can he play or no?
Yeah, he can play.
Okay.
That's one of the differences, which still kind of baffles me between English sort of loan deals and ones that happen abroad, is that they can play against their parent club. But it will be interesting to see him, because there's a lot of people who are talking about Pobega as if he's basically a shoo-in to come back next season. And like, if we don't buy Mete, for example, then we've got a replacement for free because he looks fairly ready, having spent last season on loan in Serie B. He doesn't play that role. To me, he would be basically a Krunic replacement, because he tends to play as like a box-to-box mid or an attacking midfielder rather than a defensive one. But we'll keep an eye on him. In terms of our selection, would you put out the full-strength team? Obviously, Calabria aside, because he's going to be suspended, so you think Dallo will be at right back. Would you put out a full-strength team, or are you making a few little tweaks?
I'm going all out. I think Spezia are quite a decent side for... like giving him some respect there, because to say they've come up, they're doing okay, they've got a very good manager, I think, in charge. So I've put out a full strength side. I've attempted to then rest players for the midweek fixture in the Europa, and then have a pretty much fully fit side for Inter. But I don't think we're at a stage just for the derby where we can even risk dropping a point. So we need to go all out for that, I think.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. I look at goal difference right now, and we have 6 less goals than Inter. So if we don't win the derby, then that's the next thing. And if we want to get above them, we got to start padding in some goals. And, you know, we just put 4 this week, so let's try and do it again next week.
Yeah, and you want to get the team as ready for Inter as possible. You don't want to keep on – I mean, we've been changing the lineup every game, and we're still in first. But just to get ready for – Inter, you don't want to be messing up too many things.
Yeah.
I saw a stat that we've had at least 4 absences in 14 of our 20 league games so far, obviously preceding today. And then that became 21 because of the 2 late dropouts. I think the temptation will be there to rotate, but he won't do it. I think with the Europa League tie, which has almost become an inconvenience, would it be fair to say? Like, I keep thinking about that Red Star game, either side of the Inter game, both legs, but obviously then the second leg before Roma as well, which is a big, big league game. You know, they could easily do a job on us. It feels a bit like an inconvenience, but I'm going at it with the formula of just make sure we don't lose the first leg. You know, if we make sure we go there and we don't lose the game, we should take care of business at home.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we've got enough depth in the squad to do a full rotation for both games. Not full, but pretty much full. You could change like 8 players in that side, still be enough to get a job done against them. I'd be tempted just to go there, grab a goal. As long as we can get an away goal, then yeah, I think we can get the job done at home. But I'm not too worried about the game. I think even if we changed 8 or 9 players around, I think we'd still come away with a win.
I think there's a potential for it to be a bit more difficult a tie than people's think, because of how well they're doing domestically. You know, they're absolutely rolling over every team week in, week out in the Serbian League. And I know the counter to that is it's the Serbian League, but we saw with Bodo Glimt, who were, in my opinion, not as good a team, but they were doing so well in the league. And they're playing such an attractive brand of football that they came and they gave us a real scare, because they were playing without fear. You know, and I think that we might get a more difficult tie, but over 2 legs, we will probably... We hopefully will find a way to beat Red Star.
No disrespect to Red Star, but I think we're lucky that we haven't got one of the harder teams we could have probably picked up, considering where
Ajax.
The tie's fought. Yeah, for example.
Lille got where, Ajax, didn't they?
Where the tie's fallen. So, like I said, I think we haven't got anything to worry about there. But can
be grateful. Will you guys be that disappointed if we get knocked out of the Europa League?
Oh, no, yeah, maybe.
I won't.
I mean, I at this point, being first in the competition at this late in the league, I want to concentrate on the league.
Yeah, that's kind of what was the question I was going to ask. Is say we go into this first leg, you know, it's a draw or whatever the result is, it's a draw, and then we lose to Inter. Now, do we care more about, okay, let's see what we could do in Europa and push for that? Or do we just kind of take the backseat, say, okay, let's get rid of these extra silly games and let's try to get that number one spot back. Let's push for the league, try to win the Scudetto.
I would necessarily say the silly, because you've still got Champions League quality teams in the Europa League. So if we want a fair assessment of where we're at this year and the type of teams we're going to come up against next year in the Champions League, it's a good time to be saying, right, the depth actually isn't good enough to be playing in the Champions League, which I think we already know, but it gives us a chance to really find our weaknesses and start putting together a plan for the summer of who's in, who's out, etc.
Yeah, I get that, but at the same time, my concern is not can we compete in the Champions League, it's can we qualify for the Champions League. And so I don't really care how we do in the Champions League next year so much as long as we're in it. You know, that's step one. We can't jump to step two. So I want to make sure we get in there first, and that's the most important thing to me. And granted, winning Europa is qualification for the Champions League, so that is a path, but it'd be real sweet to get it in the league.
I still think with 32 teams in the Europa League, and as Jan says, there's a fair few of them who are Champions League quality, it's going to be really difficult for us to win the Europa League. I think we could do it, but for example, if you want to talk about teams that are of Champions League caliber for us to test ourselves again, I think we had one in Lille in the group stages, because they're top of Liga, they're above PSG by 2 points. They're flying this season. Mm-hmm. And they assaulted us in one game and we drew the other game. So that might be pretty worrying. Like, you think if we get deep in the Europa League, all we have to do is to run into another team that's...
I would argue we're better than them now, though. I think
I think we're really similar, and obviously there's the coincidences of them being Elliot influenced and the way that they're relying so much on pace, power, young players. They're similar. Whether they're ahead of us at the moment, I don't know, but it's funny that we're both top of our league by 2 points when people weren't expecting it. You
know, I think we went into that Lille game massively underestimating them, and I think it showed when we played them. Like, so I wouldn't say they're ahead of us. I think we are better than them, especially now with the recruitment that we've done. So that'd be a good test, but I think that we would beat them. I think we could actually... There's not a team in the Europa League that really worry me too much.
I think maybe
Leicester might worry me, but I think we could go and win it.
I don't think we underestimated Lille so much as we were just early in our project, and it was more so a fear thing for the younger guys. Obviously, Zlatan wasn't afraid, but you know, it's...
I don't think Zlatan played in that game.
No, but he's still on the team. He still talks. You know, he gives them... Okay. You know, but I'm just thinking they look at it as like, this is our first real test. Like, we're doing well at this point, but this is the first time we're playing a team that's like actually a top quality in the top league. And let's see what happens then. And then we folded. So I think now we do much better.
Even though we lost against them 3-0, we still topped the group.
Right.
So, I mean,
Yazeki won it. It was basically a one-man show.
Yeah.
And he is good. I do like him. He's banging him in now. The teams that worry me in the Europa League are Man United, because I know they've been a joke in recent years by their standards, but they're doing okay again this season. Yeah, I'd be a bit worried if we got Lille again, because I think of the psychology of it, but I understand why you say we might win. And I'm really worried by Arsenal.
I want Arsenal and I want Lille. Those are the two teams I'd like to face.
Okay.
I think it'd be Man United that worry me, and Leicester worry me a little bit. And do you know what? Rangers worry me.
I would love to play United.
Rangers is an interesting one, because imagine if crowds start coming back for that. I mean, Jesus, Ibroxes.
And they're flying this year. They haven't even lost a game, have they? They're a team.
But then again, we did beat Celtic and they'd won 9 league titles in a row. I don't know. It's one of them competitions, isn't it? Like, often you see teams go deep in the competition and you're like, I've no idea who they are. I've never heard of them.
I think more clubs are taking it seriously now than what they did, say, 5 or 6 years ago. It started to be recognised as a real competition, and it's one that we haven't won yet. And I don't think, with the squad size that we've got, if we go out of that competition, then I think we're going to have too big of a squad just for the league. So I think we are going to try and go a bit further.
Well, we might as well talk about it. We've already got a big enough squad for Hauge to be left out. So to try and explain it to those who haven't seen, but I'm sure you have, you separate your squad in the Europa League into List A and List B. List A, for the group stage, we had 23 slots for. And the players who go in List B are players that have come through our academy system. So they basically aren't counted against the overall tally. List A spots for us went from 23 down to 22 because we brought in three players who weren't brought up in Italian academies, and one player left who was in Andrea Conti, so that meant one less slot. Rumours were it was between Krunic, Mete and Hauge for who would be left out of that final slot. It ended up being Hauge. My argument still is that why on earth you leave out your top scorer in the competition is beyond me. Like, Europa League football seemed to be where we were seeing the best from Hauge, albeit against inferior opponents, and we can't have any passengers now. But I don't think Krunic answers any problems that we might have. You know, he's at best the fifth choice defensive midfielder because we've got obviously the two pairings, and then he might be the third choice attacking midfielder behind Çalhanoğlu and Brahim. So I don't see why in any situation he should even get a minute. Whereas with Hauge, I think he's a good defensive winger. Let's say we're winning a game late on, or we have to protect the lead, I'd be looking to bring him on because we've seen actually he's quite good at tracking back and winning the ball back. I think there are situations for Hauge, especially if we needed to go two up top or something in a game. I just didn't get it. I thought it was a bit shit to, you know, a kid who scored six goals in the competition this season, if you factored in the goals that he scored in the qualification stage as well, three goals in the group stage. And he actually scored two winners as well, including the one that made sure that we topped the group. So, don't know, I didn't think it sent a great message because Krunic ain't going to be here beyond the summer, whereas Hauge's going to be here for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about how Hauge's not for sale, he's not going to go out on loan like we see apart from this team, well, where do we see it? What's the message we're sending him? You know, we're not going to let him go out and develop, but we're also not going to let him stay here and play. It's an interesting situation, and I understand it wasn't probably something we wanted. Like, we obviously intended to have him there, but I just don't understand why. Like you said, I mean, when Hauge comes on, I don't feel like we're necessarily becoming a better squad by seeing him subbed on, but I don't feel like we're getting worse. When Krunic comes on, I feel, okay, here is a glaring hole in our team right now. That's the spot everyone should attack if they want to do something to us.
Krunic is like one contribution in the Europa League, really, that we can all remember is him giving the ball away twice at home to Celtic, which led to us being 2-0 down.
Did he not score against Celtic or against Sparta Praha that he scored?
He scored away at Celtic, yeah. He scored that header when he played left wing, bizarrely.
I can see both sides of it. Like, at the end of the day, it's purely who sees the lads every day in training. And if he thinks Krunic fits better, then it is what it is. Krunic is still getting minutes despite like having Hauge on the bench. I know they both played today. But with Hauge, I'd like seeing him go out on loan. But I wouldn't say we look worse with him in the team, but we certainly seem to be carrying him at the minute. And I know we're carrying Krunic, but Krunic has just got that more versatility for us than what Hauge has. Hauge's a left winger, yeah, maybe he can play centre attacking mid, whereas Krunic can play left wing, can play that attacking mid role, he can play in the centre of midfield. He just gives us more options and a bit more experience than him being on the team. So that's the only reason I can see why he's done it, but in the end of the day, it's purely his decision, and if he thinks that's a better fit, then clearly it must be. And we've just got to trust that decision.
Yep, can't argue with trusting the manager for the reasons that you said. And apparently, Hauge's taking it really well. Not that he's going to kick off and start posting cryptic shit on social media or anything, but apparently he took it well. And perhaps it's also, as we spoke about, Jan, like it could be just preservation in terms of, right, okay, let's just keep him out of that for now. And let's make sure if we're going to give him minutes, they're in the league so he can adapt and acclimatise more to Serie A. You can almost split his first few months in half in terms of his performances in Europe and his performances in the league. Performances in the league have been 4 and 5 out of 10 for the most part, Napoli aside. But his performances in Europe have been good. And I think he's looked better in that more expansive style. So we'll see.
He's played football for a straight year and all. That's what we were talking about, without a break, whereas everyone's had like some sort of pre-season or a little break where he hasn't. It reminds me of Oscar when he was at Chelsea and he played something crazy like 60, 70 games in the calendar year and then eventually he just burnt out. So it could be a bit of the preservation side of it.
I did actually mention that to his dad when I spoke to his dad, and he basically agreed. He said the same. It sounds like he might be a bit knackered, to be honest, but if that's the case, then I agree to preserve him as much as possible. Questions? Luciano Parani asks, if Inter make us delay too much in building a stadium because they can't afford to build one with us, do you think we should move on and make one ourselves? Now, this is a bit of a jump from football, but again, to fill people who aren't familiar, planning to build a new stadium, the idea is it's 1.2 billion investment, 600 million of which has to be accounted for by both clubs. Now, it doesn't mean that Elliott will pay 600 million themselves. Apparently, the plan is to get investment from like real estate companies in America and stuff who will, you know, then build their shops and stuff in the complex. And it's like one of those type things. But yeah, it sounds like Inter have a lot of problems at the moment.
Yeah, I say we do it. I say new stadium without them. It's only going to leave them further behind. You know, it's going to push us forward. And if we build it with them, it's going to push them forward with us, which isn't a bad thing. But if there's the opportunity to kind of leave them in the dust, yeah, do it.
Sentimentally,
Sentimentally,
would you be happy with Inter being at San Siro?
No, I think for me, I was against us both leaving the San Siro, to be fair, because it's just one of them stadiums that takes your breath away and it's like, wow, this is Milan. But I think if we build a new stadium, not just for the good of the club, but for the good of the city, I think both teams need to be involved. I think it could be an incredible marketing opportunity for both sides, and I don't think we could afford it on our own, even if we got the investors. Like, I think it'd just be too much for what we're wanting to build. And with like the money that we have coming in from like TV rights, stuff like that, I just don't think we could afford it. And I think it could hinder us not going in with Inter for it.
What if Elliot decided to build a stadium and then Milan decides to rent that stadium from Elliot? That way the cost of building it had nothing to do with Milan.
Will the cost do, if the team is paying for a stadium, it would hurt them.
It's not allowed.
FIFA.
Didn't something happen with Derby County like a couple of years ago, like where they overvalued the stadium and now the FFP came in and stuff like that?
There's been various instances. I think Chef Wednesday have had a problem with it as well, haven't they? They assigned the ownership of the ground to the owner of the club and it caused all kinds of legality problems. They got a points deduction for it. So I don't think it's allowed, but I do like the business acumen there. The thing with the argument against building a new stadium, which is a divisive topic, because people have been to San Siro know it's absolutely incredible, amazing, as you say, breathtaking. And we keep being told it's going to massively increase our revenue, it's going to take us to the next level as a club. Juve would say, yes, it did. Them moving out of their old stadium was absolutely beneficial for them. Arsenal might argue the opposite. It never took them to the next level like it was meant to. And in fact, they were told that they couldn't afford players because they were still paying for the stadium.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to Tottenham. They've done the same, haven't they? West Ham have done it where they moved into the Olympic Stadium and it hasn't taken them to the next level. I think it's all right for a small, like, you meant the stadium, what is it, like 40,000 seats, something like 50,000? But I think Milan would need a bigger one. Juventus don't even fill it. And I think if Milan are back on, like, the glory, like, into the glory years, I think they'd fill it. And I just think we would end up still paying it off for a while.
I would argue Tottenham didn't get to the next level. I mean, they obviously qualified for Champions League that final season at White Hart Lane, but they've also stayed there every season since. So I don't know if the stadium's necessarily what's done it, but they have gotten to that next level since the stadium.
Oh, they look like shit this season.
Well, yeah. There's that.
As a brand, I mean, you can argue on-field, off-field, that maybe is a big difference. But, I don't know. We'll see. I think that's going to drag out for a while because nothing's ever easy with Italian bureaucracy. Other questions? I'll ask one more and then we'll wrap it up because I'm conscious of time. Christian Espinosa, which player that has left the club in the last 3 years would help us out the most now? He thinks Bonaventura would do a better job than Krunic.
I know who Anthony's going to say.
You do. You could just say it for me because I guarantee you're right.
I'm not going to say his name, but I agree with Bonaventura. I don't think he should have left.
It's Andre Silva.
No, because he sucked. It's in
Lads, I'll be back in one moment.
He's had enough. He can't handle this anymore. He's gone. I'm taking
Did he
over.
Shart or something?
I don't know. That was weird. That was dramatic. But yeah, I think Andre Silva, because he's got more goals than Haaland right now this season in Bundesliga, only behind Lewandowski, and that makes sense because he's probably the best.
That doesn't mean that he would be doing as good in this league, though.
Oh, I bet he would. I bet he would.
Oh, I don't think so.
Bonaventura, I like him. I didn't want him to leave. I thought, I agree. I thought he could have done a better job than Krunic. I hate to kind of say it, but I actually think Sousa would be. He's what we're missing a little bit on the right wing, just a bit of unpredictability and stuff like that. I say Sousa, I'm struggling to think about who we've had over the last 3 years.
Did you just say that Sousa has unpredictability?
He doesn't compare to Salamaca, for example.
He's a one-trick pony, man. He runs up the right wing, cuts in, and shoots. That's what
I'd say Sousa's probably...
He's still got like a little bit of unpredictability about him, and he can turn the game on his head like with a shot that could just go in the top.
Like I'd say he's probably the most predictable player we've had in a while. However, I do agree with you that he would be better than both Salamakers and Castillejo in this. Because we have such an like stone-solid identity right now, everyone has their role, they know what their job is. With Sousa being so good at that one trick, if we found a way to implement that into everyone else's roles, I bet he's assisting all day long. He might not be cutting in and making those goals, but he's cutting in and throwing those crosses up, and Zlatan's heading them home all day long. So Sousa might actually be a really good shout.
Yeah, I don't, because I'm trying to think of who's left over the last 3 years, and there's no one that like jumps out, because everyone that's left didn't deserve to be at Milan, and none of them could really provide anything for us. So that's why the only person I could probably argue for is Sousa at the minute. I'm struggling to think of anyone else that's left that I'm thinking, wow.
Nucci.
Who was the Argentinian center defensive mid?
Musaki?
Biglia.
Oh,
Biglia.
Oh, Jesus.
No, you see, that's what I mean. Locatelli, I suppose, maybe you could put a shout in there.
Crotone.
Above, Crotone. Then you could, but other than... would they break into... If you're talking about one player that could come in and change the team, I think the right wing spot's the only spot that's letting us down. So
yeah,
compared Bonaventura to Krunic as like a replacement, so like not necessarily coming in and
they are equal starting.
Yeah, fair enough as a replacement, but again, I wouldn't. There's no one in the starting 11 that I'd want replacing. So the only place that I'd want replacing is right wing. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I get that 100%. Have we, besides Sousa, who was our last right wing before him? I can't even remember.
Niang, I suppose, played there a little bit, maybe. Yeah. El Shaarawy.
He was on the left, I thought.
He was
on the left. I'm just trying to think of players that kind of played on the right wing. But I think it was Sousa, because he's been there since, 5-6 years?
Yeah, I think you're right. That was the only one. All right.
That's cramped up. Literally what? Had crap because of the way I'm sat on my bed, my leg just went into cramp, and I thought I can't be screaming down the camera, so I'm just gonna have to go out the room. So I've been laying on the floor, stretching myself out.
You look like you saw a ghost. You were like, I gotta go.
No, honestly, I'm in pain. I thought I can't just be like, down the thing. Anyway, yeah, did we? What were the other
wrap
answers?
Wrap it up.
Yeah,
Andre Silva. Sousa's unpredictability. And you know who AJ said. Who do you say?
Oh, it's a difficult one. Has to be someone who's a right winger.
So
the last 3 years. Yeah, it must be Sousa, probably. Yeah, I'll go with Sousa as well. Right, that's it. A bit of an abrupt end, but thank you very much for listening, everyone. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. I've been joined by Anthony Talgrood.
Yeah, it's been fun. I'm happy to win. We'll be back next week with a couple more wins or one win. And yeah, Toward 45.
Yeah, Edward_Toth.
Yeah, at UK_AC Milan. See you next week when we're still at the top of the table.
Absolutely. Hope you're right. And in the meantime, check out our merch if you haven't already. Like this video, subscribe. Excellent stuff, lads. And yeah, stay tuned because we're going to be doing another giveaway very soon. So make sure you're following us on all the social medias to be ready for when that comes out. So yeah, thank you very much for listening, everyone. We'll catch you in a week's time.
Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, goal!